As organizations become increasingly dependent on software, the opportunity for security-related risks also increase. In today's podcast, we will be discussing the Security Engineering Risk Analysis Framework, a model-based approach for analyzing complex security risks in software-reliant systems and system of systems early in the lifecycle. Welcome to the SEI podcast series, a production of the Carnegie Mellon Software Engineering Institute. The SEI is a federally funded research and development center sponsored by the U.S. Department of Defense and operated by Carnegie Mellon University. A transcript of today's podcast is posted on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts. My name is Suzanne Miller. I'm a principal researcher here at the SEI, and today I am pleased to introduce you to my colleague and friend, Chris Alberts, who has been a guest on the podcast series before, talking about his work with Carol Woody on security and wireless emergency alerts. As I mentioned earlier, in today's podcast, we're going to be discussing the Security Engineering Risk Analysis Framework. First, a little bit about our guest. Chris's research supports the development of advanced methods for managing risk and opportunity in multi-enterprise and multi-system environments. Prior to his work in this area, he co-developed the Octave approach for managing information security risks and the continuous risk management methodology for managing software development project risks. He has also co-authored two books, one, Managing Information Security Risks, the Octave Approach, and the second, Continuous Risk Management Guidebook. Welcome, Chris. It's good to see you again.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So let's start off by having you give us some insight into the current vulnerability landscape that's faced by both government and business. What types of security risks do they actually face?
I'll start with businesses first. Very often you'll see businesses worried about customer information and breaches that lead to attackers gaining access to that. And you can think about the Target and the Home Depot attacks in the past couple years as being examples of that. From the perspective of government organizations, it's sensitive and classified information that they're worried about. And recently, for instance, both the State Department and the White House have been attacked successfully, and information, sensitive information, was exploited in those instances. And then another one that hasn't occurred but is of concern are the critical infrastructures. Mm-hmm. And there, for instance, the power grid. We're worried about whether somebody can exploit vulnerabilities and create an outage over a large geographic area, and the impacts of that are pretty obvious.
Okay. And I remember some things about manufacturers' passwords not being reset on critical infrastructure equipment and things like that. There's a lot of different ways that these kinds of vulnerabilities can show themselves, not just in software.
Right. Right.
And so we know from research that operational security vulnerabilities have three main causes: design weaknesses, implementation and coding weaknesses, and system and configuration errors, correct?
Right.
So which of these root causes did you focus on in this research?
Here we're looking at the design weaknesses. The other two are more or less well-researched, and there are a lot of approaches for them. So, for instance, with the implementation and coding issues, software patches are one way of addressing these. To prevent them, secure coding practices is another way.
Robert Secord has done a lot of research
right,
in that area.
Right, there's a lot of work in CERT being done there. System configuration errors, when you learn about a misconfiguration, you can address that by setting the configuration correctly. So those are addressed in those ways.
Okay.
Now, from a design weakness point of view, we're talking about things that really affect the requirements, the architecture, and the design of the system. So these are fundamental flaws in the way that the system is designed. So you brought up passwords earlier. Authentication is a good example. Mm-hmm. If you don't really specify what the nature of the authentication in a system is, you might, for instance, have people using user IDs and passwords that are sent over the network unencrypted. Someone can steal those and then log into the system and gain access.
Right.
And that's a simple example of a design weakness.
Okay.
But once a system is fielded, if a weakness has something that is fundamentally affecting the architecture of the system, you may not have the opportunity to go back in a cost-effective way and re-architect
right.
the system, so you have to live with those issues.
or you have to find workarounds that are often difficult for both the user and the people that are actually trying to maintain the configuration.
Yeah, and ultimately, you're probably going to accept more risk than you really wanted when you operate the system because of that.
And you didn't know that you were accepting that risk when you accepted the system. So
right.
you thought you had a system that worked in a certain way. You find these architecture and design flaws, and now you've implicitly accepted risk that you really should have explicitly known about.
Right, and so what we're trying to do is build security in by modeling risk early in the lifecycle and then explicitly articulating what that risk is and then proactively implementing controls to counteract that risk.
So is that different from existing approaches? It sounds like it is.
Well, most of the existing approaches, there's been a lot of work in the operational mm-hmm. area and in systems that are operational. There's been some research, and more researchers, the research is growing in the area of early life cycle. So there's more attention being paid to it now, but it's still largely ignored early in the life cycle. But for those assessments, risk assessments that do exist, they tend to be a little bit simplistic in their approach to risk.
So things like mission thread workshops and architecture trade-off analysis do look at quality attributes of the system and security being one of them. But right now, they don't have a particular framework for saying, here's how we need to look at security in particular. And it sounds like this risk analysis framework is something that could marry well with some of those other techniques that look at the architecture as a whole for risks and opportunities, but this is an area where you could get much more specific than you typically can in those kinds of workshops in relationship to security risks. Is that a fairly good?
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. In fact, one of the models that we normally build is a mission thread.
Okay.
And so if you do a mission thread workshop, then
this could be your mission thread.
This could be a follow-on piece to do the risk analysis based on that mission thread.
So have you piloted this new approach with any organizations that you can tell us about?
Yeah, we piloted with several organizations, all government organizations. One study that I can just talk you through without giving too many specifics, we did an interesting study where we took a system that was about to be deployed. We did a risk analysis based using information that would be available in the requirements development mm-hmm. stage. We identified a set of controls that we felt were applicable to the system. From that set of controls, a subset of them were actually something that should have been, in our opinion, addressed in requirements. So we created requirements for that subset of controls. We then, for those requirements, we compared them to the security requirements that had been developed for the system and found several gaps and missing requirements. So that study kind of shows that a rigorous risk assessment early on might be able to identify some gaps in security.
That are typical kinds of gaps that people misaddress in requirements and design in the current way that our systems are being developed.
And then something that I can talk about, we published a couple of reports on the Wireless Emergency Services.
Ah, okay.
On the Wireless Emergency Alerts Service, or the WEA service. And we have two reports. One was published in 2014, and the other was just recently published. We have two reports. Both were published in 2014.
And have you looked at the business context? Both of these are really government contexts. Have you looked at some of the business issues in terms of, I'm curious as to whether business architectural flaws related to security are similar or different from government flaws related to security.
We have not used this technique with industry organizations yet. So,
but I'll bet you'd like to.
We certainly would.
So if you have that, if you're interested in this topic, you need to call Chris and find out if you can do that.
And more government groups, and especially Department of Defense organizations as well. We're interested in getting involved with programs that are developing systems.
That are early.
Early in the life cycle.
And I'm also assuming that early in modernization, if they're like in a sustainment, but they're doing a modernization, so they're actually looking at all that requirements and design
kinds of
elements again. Okay, that's fair. So that's a call for action for any of you that would like to collaborate with the SEI in these kinds of areas. But what else are you doing? Because Chris Alberts never sits still. There's always something coming next. So what's the next thing that you guys are thinking about? And in particular, I know that you like to sort of make software program managers feel that software reliant systems will function as intended when deployed and that their cybersecurity risk will be kept within an acceptable tolerance over time. So I know that's been an interest of yours for a while. What are you doing in that area?
Well, one of the things that's, I think, interesting that we're starting to work on now is a software assurance framework. So one of the things we're doing is identifying practices that can be applied across the lifecycle, software assurance practices. And the idea then is that we could take this into a program and look at their practices to look for gaps, strengths, and weaknesses, and identify gaps in current assurance practices where they can address those and become a little bit stronger.
Okay. Chris, we do look forward to your continued work in this field, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks.
To view a technical report that Chris co-authored on this topic, which provides a deeper dive into this research, please visit the SEI Digital Library at resources.sei.cmu.edu/library. In the search field, enter the name of the technical note that he recently co-authored on this topic, Introduction to the Security Engineering Risk Analysis Framework, and you'll be able to view all related resources on this topic. This podcast is available on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts and on Carnegie Mellon University's iTunes U site. As always, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email us at info@sei.cmu.edu. Thank you for listening.